Welcome to the Full Press Fantasy Pod, part of Full Press Coverage. My name is Kyle Senra, and joining me is one of my co-hosts, Alessandro Senator. How are you doing?
Doing pretty good, Kyle. Doing pretty good for this fine Tuesday.
Yeah, fine Tuesday. I mean, I've been just watching hockey pretty much since Saturday at noon, so here to talk football, though. No hockey here. Specifically, we're going to talk about the Carolina Panthers, so don't sweat it. We got... is it CJ Sweat? Is that how you pronounce your last name?
Got it.
Yeah. I realize now that that joke would be much worse if your last name wasn't pronounced Sweat, so I should have made sure before, but now we know.
You know, my last name gets pronounced many things, and if it's anything besides Sweat, I usually don't correct people because anything sounds better than that. So whatever you want to call me, Kyle, is fine.
You don't sweat it. All right. Well,
yeah.
I'm sure you heard that enough. And if you haven't, well, you're going to hear it a lot today, probably. But CJ, thank you so much for joining us. I know at Full Press Coverage, you record the Full Press Panthers podcast. So just tell us a bit about that and anything you have planned coming up for that.
Yeah, sure, man. Well, I appreciate y'all having me on. The Full Press Panthers podcast is, you know, it's been a blast to record. We started it back in March. So full disclosure, I did not grow up a Panthers fan. I grew up a Washington Redskins fan. They were my team all growing up. And, you know, I remember John Riggins rushing for the touchdown and my grandmother dancing on the table when I was a young kid. And, you know, I've got all these just Washington jerseys and everything. So that full disclosure, that was my team. I picked the Panthers. You know, I talked to Ian about doing a podcast. He was like, you know, hey, we'd love for you to take over one of our NFL teams. And I picked the Panthers because it's close to home. So I'm in Richmond, Virginia, and I've been all throughout the Carolinas. Favorite college team is Duke. So I'm very familiar with Carolina. And I picked them because I'm like, you know what? I want to be able to bring something where you're not going to have bias. You're not going to have somebody that's basically just taking everything that the local Carolina media does and just duplicating that. Like, I want to give something people that's fresh, that's different. We're going to be real about it. So, I mean, you know, the stuff that we talk about, it's not all warm and fuzzy and rah-rah and being a fan. Some of it's, you know, we're incredibly critical of, you know, some of the organization and current players and past players. And, you know, sometimes we're supportive. So we're going to call it like we see it. I think that's what makes us unique. And it has been an absolute blast.
Full Press Coverage. We're trying to give you the best information. That's why you know, we bring guests like CJ on for episodes like this. As much as you've heard us talk about Panthers players throughout this whole offseason, it's nice to get again extra insight and see on some of the things that the team is doing. Speaking of that, I mean, Christian McCaffrey is, I think in most cases, the number one overall pick in draft. So people, it's not so much about that, really. I think the real question is he going to score like he did last year, where he was so far ahead of everyone else that you had a huge impact if you had McCaffrey on your lineup, even compared to whoever was RB2 last year? Or is he going to come back down to the pack, I think is really the question. And I think he could drop down in efficiency and overall production and still be the RB1 overall.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's all relative, right? I mean, when we say come down from what he did a year ago, okay, well, a year ago was absolutely insanity numbers. I mean, if he duplicated that every year for, you know, 7-8 years, he'd be in the conversation for one of the best running backs in football. And I mean, maybe that is how he ends his career. I don't know that that's necessarily the case. So, you know, if he comes down in production from a fantasy standpoint, you could still very well be the number one running back. Here's the thing. Here would be, so I'm going to give you my concern, and then I'm going to tell you why I still like him. So my concern is you have to look at Matt Rhule and what he brings to the table. Matt Rhule is not the type of guy where if you tell him, like, hey, we've got this star player, he's not the type of guy that's like, okay, I'm just going to rely on that star player to be great, and I'm going to build my game plan around him. If you look at Baylor, the backup running back had 6 more carries than the starting running back. So, like, he is not going to be beholden to anybody, okay? Now, all of that said, he does one thing really, really well, and this is why I think the Panthers got him, is he will get his players and he will get his most talented players into open space. Everything he does in his game plan is about getting guys in the space and getting talented guys in the space. This is how Robbie Anderson even really got onto people's radar. You know, he went undrafted, but people were watching his tape at Temple, and they could see, oh my gosh, once this guy gets into space, he's flat out amazing. And then he started getting calls and, you know, started getting some tryouts. So that's what Matt Rhule does really well. The other thing that I think plays into McCaffrey's favor is Marty Herney, the GM, would not have given him this type of contract if he didn't feel that Christian McCaffrey could live up to those standards. So if you're, I mean, this is a conversation where Marty Herney is going to sit down with Matt Rhule and say, hey, we're going to make Christian McCaffrey the number one running back in the number highest paid running back in the league. If we're going to do that, we want to see his production. We want to see him have really good numbers. So I think there's going to be this nice balance of where Matt Rhule is going to allow Bridgewater to distribute the ball. Matt Rhule will not be beholden to him. So I think don't think you're going to see 40 carries a game, which is good for his career longevity. But I also think there's this balance of there's going to be just enough pressure coming from the GM and the front office to where you can't just build a game plan that's just purely based on efficiency. You have to get your talented guys involved because we're paying for them to be here. So I still think he's got a ton of value at the number one pick.
And I think last year it seemed like McCaffrey was every game playing 100% of the offensive snaps. So I think, is that something, if you had to put on an average per game, where do you think that number lies closer to?
Well, it's going to be interesting. I think right now it's tough to predict. Once we get a couple games into it and we can see how Matt Rhule is going to ride this thing, you know, I think we'll have a better feel for it. Based on how Matt Rhule called games at Baylor, I think you'll see McCaffrey on the field about 70-75% of the time. Okay. Reason is, and honestly, I think that number would be lower, but the problem is who's behind McCaffrey? I mean, it's Reggie Bonifon. It's Mike Davis, who had one halfway decent year at Seattle. Like, there isn't another running back on the roster that you can really trust. And you can't let Teddy Bridgewater throw 30, 35 times a game. He needs to be kept at 25 times a game. So you're going to have to rely some on McCaffrey. So they're only going to take him out so often. But Matt Rhule is the type of guy. He likes a lot of substitutions. He likes to use a lot of different running backs. So I don't think it's going to be like last year where McCaffrey's literally on the field every offensive snap. I think he'll be off some.
I think Alessandro wants to mention one more recent addition to the Panthers' backfield. I think just today, actually, so we can kind of talk some breaking news here. Almost. Not quite breaking news, but Alessandro?
First off, before we get into it, it's so nice to have someone who I can actually talk to about the Carolinas with, because I'm in Carolina and I follow the Panthers as well. And I have to say this because I went to Western Carolina and I rooted for NC State for one time, but Duke is puke. So
No. Okay.
I had to get that out of the way. I've been itching at it.
Terrence Biggs is going to be happy with you there.
I know he will. And I can't wait for that episode. You guys recently acquired Trenton Cannon from waivers after my Jets cut
Jets.
Him. Yes. Where do you see him fitting in the offense? Because I know you have Farrell Cooper as your kick returner. Is there going to be a possible competition for kick returner, or do you see him as a legitimate backup running back for McCaffrey? Because right now all you have is Reggie Bofanen, Jordan Scarlett, and Mike Davis. So do you see him, you know, fighting Farrell Cooper for the return, both kick or punt or one another, like the way we did in New York, where we have one from one? Or are you seeing him more as an actual running back? Because he's still fresh. He's only 3 years in the league, but he sat behind some big names, Le'Veon Bell, Frank Gore, Bilal Powell. So, I mean,
can't forget Elijah McGuire.
Yeah, Elijah McGuire. No, actually, he traded off with him all the time. So
I'm a big McGuire fan. That kid is super fast. And if you're a Madden guy, it's a lot of fun to play in Madden. So I'll tell you this about Cannon. I being completely honest with you, I did not realize they went and got him today. That is, so for those of you who don't know, I do mortgages for a living. So like my life between like 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. during the week has been pretty consumed. But I will tell you, I'm familiar with Cannon, and I don't see him having much of an impact on special teams. The Jets used him, but he really didn't do too much for the Jets. I think he had 7 or 8 returns somewhere around there, and I'm not sure that he even eclipsed 100 yards on those. So he's not a great returner. He's more or less just a speed guy. I don't know how great his vision necessarily is. Farrell Cooper's a guy that when USC got him, he went in right away under their special teams plan and had an immediate impact. And I think Carolina expects to see more from him in that regard. So I don't think you're going to see him replace Farrell Cooper at the return game. I think he's coming in specifically to help alleviate the running game. And again, what does that look like? I don't know. I think just because of it's essentially McCaffrey and everybody else with this running back, you're going to see a lot more zone schemes from Matt Rhule. I think this is going to very much have a 49ers feel to it in the way they run the ball. And that's why he's bringing in guys. Is he's basically saying, hey, we're going to bring in guys who are going to fight for the starting job, like no starting job's guaranteed, and we're just going to use a running back committee after McCaffrey. And so I think he legitimately is coming in to be part of that zone running scheme that we're going to see.
I did look it up, by the way. Last year, Trenton Cannon, 5 kickoff returns, 96 yards. So he came in under 100 yards, just like you said.
Yeah. So again, yeah, I didn't think he had that much of an impact in the kickoff return game. So I don't foresee him really being used that way here. Just to give you an idea, Baylor last year had 5 running backs all rush for over 200 yards. 2 running backs had over 100 attempts, 2 separate running backs. And then the quarterback, Charlie Brewer, he ran for quite a bit too. So this is a lot of what Matt Rhule did at Baylor was a lot of RPO stuff. I think it'll be interesting to see if he incorporates Teddy Bridgewater into that. And then, of course, if he incorporates McCaffrey and the rest of this running back crew into that as well. And if he does, I think potentially there's a space for Trent Cannon on the roster.
I mean, Trent Cannon's not bad when he's healthy. I mean, he just got hurt for us, and we put him on IR last year in November. I mean, he's more of a compliment back because he's already got 38 rushing attempts, 113 yards. He's got a rushing touchdown, but that was goal line work. And yeah. We used him in some of the passing games. He's got, I think, 150 receiving yards. So we use him, but he's more of a compliment back. But, I mean, there's no point in having him when we have someone else. And, you know, we would love to use him as a punt returner, but we already got a decent punt returner on team now that's been doing things for us. I mean, I wish we had Andre Roberts back, but that's a whole nother song and dance. That's a whole nother song and dance. But, no, I just didn't know if you actually saw him as a legit back or competition in training camp. Because I remember you guys had Elijah Holyfield. And I swore up and down that Elijah Holyfield was going to be out Jordan Scarlett, and it was really close, and you guys went with Scarlett because Holyfield was undrafted, and that kind of made me upset. So I just didn't know if you saw him as an actual running back coming in, yeah, or you saw him as return guy slash competition, get the boys riled up.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's coming in and he's going to get an opportunity in training camp. And I think aside from DJ Moore, Robbie Anderson, Christian McCaffrey, maybe Teddy Bridgewater, although I think I can make an argument on the opposite of this, I think everybody is going to be evaluated in training camp. So Trent Cannon, for better or for worse, that's what he's being brought in to do, I think, to push Mike Davis, to push Scarlett, to push Bonifon. And we'll see if he gets a spot on this roster. But, I mean, I think Matt Rhule's just looking at this like, hey, after Christian McCaffrey, we don't have anything, so we don't have anything to lose by bringing in another guy just to see if he can fit.
Okay, so if you're drafting Christian McCaffrey, is there a backup running back that Christian McCaffrey managers should handcuff him with in the event that, okay, he's out with an injury or whatever the case may be? Is there one player that's going to come in and replace it? Or I guess the answer, and the answer perhaps I'm expecting, is it just going to be a three-way or four-way committee that not one of those backups is really worth having?
Yeah, I mean, I guess maybe in a deeper league, if I was going to choose somebody, I'd go with Scarlett, just because I think he's younger. You know, he's a guy that I think showed some promise in the SEC when he was at Florida. But I mean, he's not had any sort of production in the NFL. So if you're going to go with one of these backups, just, you know, with the hopes that if I go with a backup, I think he's going to get reps, I think you have to be very careful of that, especially in the draft. If it were me, I wouldn't take any of these backup running backs in a fantasy draft, but I would monitor them and see which one maybe which one secures that spot as the second one on the roster, which you'll know by week one, week two. Even if they're not getting a high level of production, if you watch and see there's a second guy getting a lot of snaps, I think that would be a sign to, okay, if McCaffrey goes down, this is who's going to get a large portion of carries, or this is who they're going to go to on, you know, third down situations, that type of thing. But I just think, to me, anybody outside of McCaffrey, I think has an equal chance of making the roster or getting cut.
Yeah, I'd get just as much chance to be that number two or be number, doesn't matter because you're not on the team. So I guess the way to play it would be, if you're going to draft McCaffrey, what you do later in drafts is look for other teams' backups. And that way, if another team starter goes down, suddenly you have trade leverage, or you have another running back that you can produce and put in your lineup. And then like CJ said, maybe if there's one guy in Carolina that does start to establish himself, you pick them up mid-season. No one's really probably going to be that interested, so you probably get them for basically free. And then you just hold that person behind McCaffrey, and if he gets hurt, then you've got that instant replace. Because suddenly, if McCaffrey gets hurt and you don't have the backup on your roster, then you're having to spend fab money or priorities in waivers, depends on how your league is set up, and then they'll become more expensive. So I think I'd play it off that. Pay attention, see how things are going snap count-wise, and it's a good strategy.
Yeah, absolutely.
With Robbie coming to Carolina, and we all know it's because Robbie is more connected to Matt Rhule, because we gave Robbie an offer and he liked Matt Rhule better than coming back to us. I'm still salty about that. So how do you see Robbie fitting in that offense? Because you guys have DJ Moore, Curtis Samuel, you have the guys you drafted, Omar Bayless this year, you got Trayvon Heights that you guys drafted, and you got a bunch of other low-level, behind-the-scenes kind of guy. I want to include Farrell Cooper, even though he's your return guy. You got Farrell Cooper and Seth Roberts are the only two veterans, so to speak, on the team. So how do you see Robbie fitting in with that crowd? Because DJ Moore and Farrell Cooper, DJ Moore and Curtis Samuel are speedsters, so is Robbie. So do you see a high-flying offense, and who do you see where? Because when Teddy was, you know, with all these different teams, including the Jets, he always favored the slot, it seemed, or, you know, the big-name guy. So where do you see Robbie fitting in with this offense, and do you see him getting a decent target share?
Well, okay, so you got to understand what Teddy's going to do. Teddy is notorious. I mean, he really is an ideal game manager. There's nothing wrong with when I say the word game manager and I hear the word game manager from a quarterback perspective, that does not make me that doesn't turn me off at all. Okay, Tom Brady is a game manager and he's a heck of a quarterback. But what the reason I bring that up is because Teddy Bridgewater will literally just throw to the first guy he sees open. That's what he's gonna do. He doesn't care if it's a 5-yard dump off pass. He doesn't care if it's a 30-yard deep ball. He's throwing to the first guy he sees that's open. That's what he's going to do. Robbie Anderson, I could make a very legitimate argument, could end the year the number one receiver in Carolina. And there's a number of reasons for it. But, I mean, first of all, you know, let's talk about how he meshes chemistry-wise in Carolina. So he played at Temple. Matt Rhule coached at Temple. Matt Rhule recruited Robbie Anderson. Matt Rhule and Robbie Anderson go way back. When Matt Rhule was at Temple, the offensive line coordinator and a recruiting assistant, he was recruiting Robbie Anderson out of high school. These guys have a lot of history together. They know each other. So he went out and got Robbie Anderson, I think, because he wanted some sort of comfortability with this thing. Then you add in the fact that we've got COVID right now, and training camp has been different. I mean, until recently, the only way these guys had met was on Zoom. So, like, literally one of the few guys on the roster that Matt Rhule has met in person is Robbie Anderson. He knows how Anderson plays. He knows the way he can call plays for Robbie Anderson. And, again, what Matt Rhule wants to do is get talented guys into open situations. He wants to get the ball into these guys' hands and just get them into open space. That's his goal. So that's how he's going to utilize Robbie Anderson. And I think he's going to design a lot of plays specifically for Anderson because he knows what Anderson's capable of. DJ Moore, I think, is great. I think he's a slightly more talented receiver than Anderson, but I think both of these guys are going to be capable of any week they could be the number one or the number two guy. The other thing I'll say, too, is Anderson, in his four seasons with the Jets, had over 3,000 receiving yards. But, I mean, he's been the number one guy with the New York, but, okay, so you're a New York fan, Alexandro. What quarterback has been thrown to him? I mean, I like Sam Darnold, but, like, this guy hasn't had a legitimate quarterback his whole career as an NFL player, and he's gone from undrafted to 3,000 yards over four seasons. Like, that's very, very legitimate. So now you give him Teddy Bridgewater, who I think is a legitimate franchise quarterback in the NFL. I think Robbie Anderson has a ton of value in fantasy leagues this year. I think he's one guy that a lot of people are looking at as, well, that's the number two receiver in Carolina, but I think there's a legitimate chance he ends up being the number one guy.
All right, I won't have to fight you on that topic. Sam Darnold is a legitimate quarterback, but yes, you're right.
I like Sam Darnold.
He did have the kissing disease. But no, the only guy that Robbie truly had was Josh McCown, and that's when in 2017 when McCown went off and he started going crazy, and Robbie racked up 940 yards before I hate saying his name. Bryce Petty came in and screwed up everything. Because he only had three games to get 60 yards and he couldn't do it. 60 yards. So,
well, I like Sam Darnold, but Sam Darnold's a 23-year-old kid who's incredibly mistake prone. He had terrible college coaching and now he's come into the league. I don't think his first year with New York he had very good coaching. We'll see if Adam Gase is the right guy. I think Sam Darnold has consistently been ruined by the situation he's been put into, and he's a young kid who's making a lot of mistakes. I mean, in comparison to how old Baker Mayfield is, Baker Mayfield's game should be twice as good as Sam's. So Sam's a good quarterback, don't get me wrong, but he's incredibly inexperienced. And for Robbie Anderson to go from young kid to now mature adult who's been in this league for a number of years, has that experience, knows how to call plays, knows how to not just throw the ball, but literally how to run an offense, I think it's going to be a world of difference for him.
Yeah, I'm not disagreeing with you because Teddy's been in the league longer. He came in 2014. He was injured in 2017 and 2018, and he only had – or 2017, he was down 2016 – My only rebuttal to that is that you went from a guy playing with Michael Thomas looking like the second coming of Drew Brees to now playing with DJ Moore, Robbie Anderson, and lesser quality than compared to Michael Thomas, caliber wide receivers. And that's the only one I want to say for that. I mean, I will grant you Sam Darnold in that topic. He's had some bad coaching, but I feel like he's risen above it because – like I always say, when the play goes dead and the coach can't talk anymore, that's when it's on the player. And there's been some really bad calls, some really good calls. So I think he's just working out the kinks as far as QB goes. But I don't want to go down this road with Sam and all that. for Robbie, I don't think Robbie will be number one. I think Robbie will be number two behind DJ because – DJ has the makings of a wide receiver one. Robbie has the makings of a wide receiver support number one.
Okay, because, so let me throw this at you. All right. So Robbie Anderson being the number one receiver in New York, where really he's never had a true wide receiver on the other side. And listen, I'm a Duke fan. I love Jamison Crowder. Okay, he might be my favorite player in the NFL, and that would be the one guy, like, I would tell you up front, I'm going to be way too biased about Jamison Crowder. Okay?
Oh, I love Crowder, too.
Yeah, no, I love Crowder. And his catch over Carolina in the victory bell. Oh my gosh, it's still like I get chills from that. I may have a slight man crush on him. Okay, how Ian, the FPC founder, feels about Tom Brady. I feel that way about Jamison Crowder. In fact, I think we might have competing feelings in that regard. So, but what I can tell you, though, is Robbie Anderson's never really had a true number two on the other side of the field. So every game, he gets the other team's best defense. I mean, literally in New York, every defensive coordinator, like, what else about that offense would you have to plan around except for Robbie Anderson? So he's getting the best defensive coordinator plan. He's getting the best cornerback going man against him. Well, now with DJ Moore on the other side and with Christian McCaffrey at running back, I mean, think about it from a defensive coordinator. You can't plan a game against Carolina around Robbie Anderson because then you're going to get burned by McCaffrey and you're going to get burned by DJ Moore. So finally, the attention's off of him a little bit. And I think this is going to be, and that's why I think there's an opportunity for Robbie Anderson to really flourish, is he doesn't have everybody's undivided attention. Now he can really just go out, beat guys man on man, which he's done for a while in New York.
I fully believe that, but I think you killed the vibe right there by saying what we all need to say. Christian McCaffrey, Curtis Samuel, DJ Moore. I mean, these guys, well, when you think Panthers, those are the three guys that pop up.
Curtis Samuel, his best season was about equal with Robbie Anderson's rookie season, which was his worst. So I do not, and I like Curtis Samuel, but I do not think he will be the number two guy in Carolina. I think very much it's DJ Moore, Robbie Anderson, and then Curtis Samuel.
It's funny because Samuel last year was basically as inefficient with his targets as Jamison Crowder was. So it's funny that we've talked about both of them. 105 targets, he got 627 yards. It's probably way worse than Crowder's efficiency, to be honest. Although, as I guess actually at some points both of them are getting such bad quarterback play. But so one thing I'm getting from all this, CJ, is so DJ Moore had 135 targets.
Yeah.
Do you expect that to go down now that Robbie Anderson's there? Do you think that really does, his presence really affects that number?
Early on, I do. Because early on, I mean, early on with Carolina, I think it's going to be a crapshoot as to what you can expect. Because, again, like what Matt Rhule hasn't really gotten to meet or practice with these guys. He's just now getting a taste of what he's got to work with. So I think early on, it's going to be Matt Rhule going with what he's most comfortable with, which is going to be a receiver that he's known for the better part of a decade and is going to be a quarterback that he wanted. And it's going to be a running back that, you know, has been the talk of the league for the past several years. That's what he's comfortable with. So, yeah, I do think early in the season, DJ Moore is going to see a slight drop in productivity. At the end of the day, I'm not saying anything negative against DJ Moore here. I think the world of the kid. I think he still is a great receiver in this league. Some people say he's a tier one guy. I wouldn't put him in the same category as Julio or Mike Evans or Amari Cooper, but I do think he's a very, very talented receiver in this league that's worthy of being anybody's number one receiver in a fantasy league. I just think out of the gate, his production is going to be a little slow, and then once Matt Rhule figures it out and once Teddy Bridgewater figures out the new offense and figures out his new toys that he gets to play with, I think you're going to see that productivity bounce back up.
Normally, I would cite some target share stats, but like you said, with COVID and this season being the way it is, I really can't cite this. Plus, with new quarterback play, it's kind of hard. But DJ Moore got 135 targets. Curtis Samuel got 107. And then now departed from Carolina, Greg Olsen, he's got 81. And Jerry's right, that's 58. So that's a whole lot of targets that needs to be going to someone. And I actually think that DJ Moore will go up and Robbie will fill in the 80-some-odd target share from Greg Olsen.
I mean, we'll see. Okay. I just think this year it's going to be all about comfortability because, I mean, and again, maybe I'm wrong about this. What I've said about COVID all along is the only thing I know is I don't know. The only thing I know is I don't know anything about COVID. So I think it's a complete guessing game as to what this offense is going to look like. New coach, new quarterback, new receiving weapon. The loss of Greg Olsen, which you mentioned, I don't know what this team looks like in the red zone. He's been a huge red zone target for this team the past several years. So I mean, I think it's going to be a very much a guessing game, even for this coaching staff, first few weeks into the year.
So play a little game here. I just want to look at ADP. And DJ Moore right now in 12-team PPR leagues is going right at the start of the fourth round, 401. Immediately before him is Allen Robinson at 312, and immediately after him is Amari Cooper at 403. So we'll just a simple comparison there. Would you take Moore over both Robinson and Cooper?
I honestly feel like, and maybe I'm a little crazy about this, I think I would take Cooper over DJ Moore.
I agree with you that you are a little crazy for saying that.
Okay. My thing with Cooper is I think the Cowboys offense, especially early on, because you're getting a lot of guys that have been around the league. I mean, McCarthy's been around the league for forever. Dak officially is in a contract year, right? And Amari Cooper is wanting to get a longer term contract. I think to the NFC East, Washington, I don't think has a very good defense right now. I think they're rebuilding. The Giants, I have no idea what the heck they're doing. The Eagles had secondary issues all year long. I just look at the NFC East. I think it's terrible. The NFC South, the Saints have a decent defense. The Falcons struggled at points early on last year, but their defense improved second half of last year. And the Bucs, I think, at least have a good pass rush. So I think the obstacles the Saints face in the division are going to be more than the obstacles the Cowboys face in the NFC East. So I just think based on the matchups Amari Cooper is going to see, he's going to be favored in more of those one-on-one matchups versus DJ Moore.
That's true. Like you mentioned, you know, he's going to always attract that top corner and not Robbie Anderson and not Curtis Samuel. We talked about this in our wide receiver tier episode. I'm not convinced Amari Cooper is the number one receiver on Dallas. I think it might be Michael Gallup. But then you're saying also you're not necessarily convinced DJ Moore is the number one receiver on Carolina. It might be Anderson. Obviously, the smart money is to think that Moore and Cooper will be their top guys, but I guess I could see either. So now with Allen Robinson, are you firmly Robinson ahead of both of those?
Well, no, I wouldn't have Robinson ahead of either one of them, only because the guy throwing to Allen Robinson as of today is Mitch Trubisky. And so with Allen Robinson, he's going to get Minnesota's best corner. Minnesota's got a good defense. He's going to get Green Bay's best corner. Green Bay's defense is improving. And, okay, Detroit's defense is terrible. But, I mean, he's got Mitch Trubisky throwing to him. So, you know, I think Cooper is better than – I would take Cooper over DJ Moore. I would take Cooper over Allen Robinson.
You know, from the very least, it seems like, you know, DJ Moore early fourth round fairly well placed. Like, are you willing to take him in the fourth round?
In the fourth round? Yeah, I think top five round, I think so. I mean, I think it depends on how the draft goes. I mean, here would be my value for DJ Moore. Just my prediction is I think he's going to start off the year rough. So if it were me, I wouldn't draft him because I feel like he's going to be overdrafted. So unless he just falls drastically low, I think he'll be overdrafted. So let's say somebody takes him in round three and that's great. Okay, well, let's say, you know, after week two, week three, he's struggling to get those production numbers you want. Well, I think after week three, the schedule loosens up a little bit. The offense is going to start finding their rhythm. Whoever has him, and this is where I think his value could be, I think you could go to whoever has him and propose a trade that on paper, based on the early season production, looks like you're offering too much. But if you really believe DJ Moore is your guy, I think you could find more value in an in-season trade than you could in the draft. So if you really like him, I mean, sure, draft him round three, round four. I think that's a great place to get him. But if you're talking 12-team league, and it's me, I'm going to wait a little bit on him because I think I'm going to get better value trading for him in the middle of the year than drafting him early in the season. I mean, but that's just my opinion based on the way I think this offense is going to come out of the gate.
Okay, that's interesting. I do like that strategy of, again, if you think players are going to struggle early, yeah, don't let someone else draft them and then swipe up the price later when it's cheaper. That is a good point. Because I'm looking in the fourth round, and yeah, not Amari Cooper. I think I'm clear on that, but I'm looking at some of the other guys going a little later in the rounds. Like both Rams receivers, actually, Cooper Kupp and Robert Woods are both going to the fourth round according to Fantasy Football Calculator. So I think I'd rather have either of those Rams receivers personally. And it might just be because of, you know, lack of a guy like Christian McCaffrey that's going to command so many targets, and lack of a receiver like Robbie Anderson coming in. If anything, they lost their big guy like Robbie Anderson in the form of Brandon Cooks. So I like both Woods and Kupp as a reference take in this fourth round. So I do feel like Moore is maybe being a slight bit overdrafted, and apparently so is Amari Cooper.
Yeah, well, and again, I think Cooper Kupp is a great early season pick. I mean, just look at the Rams schedule. It's Cowboys, Eagles, Bills, Giants, Washington, and then they get the Niners. So, I mean, Cooper Kupp's, again, if you're going to take him in the fourth round, you're going to get a ton of production out of him early. And that's really always been, and maybe I'm wrong about this. I mean, I've not had an incredible amount of success in my fantasy league. Maybe this isn't the place to share that. But I will tell you my strategy, which I've been getting progressive, I've been doing progressively more, is I almost treat it like stocks. Like, I'm looking to whatever I get early, I'm going to sell in the middle of the year. I'm going to trade a couple players out middle of the year. So, like, I mean, Cooper Kupp, five games in, you should have, just based on the teams they're playing, he should be playing at a very high level. I mean, you're getting one new coach, a secondary that was terrible last year in the Eagles, a Bills team that I think was pretty good last year, but do you buy them to duplicate that success again? A Giants team and a Washington team that's absolutely terrible. So, I mean, I think there's a very good potential for Cooper Kupp to come out of the gate and have very, very high numbers. So he would be a guy that I would feel very comfortable round three, round four taking.
I guess that would be the easy example then. If Cooper Kupp starts like he did last year, and where he was, I think, that a top three wide receiver for the first half of the year, you know, you trade that for DJ Moore early in the season, you're going to get a lot back in return on that DJ Moore side. So
I think that's a perfect way to go about it.
All right. So we worked through that strategy there. This is how you treat DJ Moore, people. The one other thing I wanted to quickly touch with ADP, and I guess you've already given your answer, CJ, but Robbie Anderson and Curtis Samuel are both going in the 14th round. Now, you've said you can see the scenario where Robbie Anderson is the number one receiver on the Panthers. Can you see that same scenario with Curtis Samuel?
No. I mean, again, it comes down to this. Curtis Samuel's best season is about equal to Robbie Anderson's worst season. I do not think Curtis Samuel... And I mean, you said again earlier that his, I think you said his efficiency rating or whatever you put it, is equal to that of Jamison Crowder. I mean, and Crowder's a fine receiver. Curtis Samuel's a fine receiver. But Robbie Anderson's been a number one receiver for the Jets for the past 4 years, and now he gets that load off. So I think Robbie Anderson has tremendous more value than Curtis Samuel as the number two. I don't think Curtis Samuel has a shot at all at being the number one receiver. If Robbie Anderson, I love Robbie Anderson, if he did not have the history with Matt Rhule, I would not feel that way. Okay, so like, understand that a big reason of why I think he could emerge is that is because he's got that history and that chemistry there. Curtis Samuel doesn't have that. So again, fine receiver, talented guy. If he's going in the 14th round, maybe that's a fine place to pick him, but I don't think he'll be the number one receiver on this team.
And I get, okay, so then my question was going to be Samuel versus Anderson, but now I think I'm shifting to, who would you rather draft late, probably as a last pick, maybe Curtis Samuel or the tight end Ian Thomas? Who do you think has a better chance to maybe be number three or number four target in that offense?
I'm not a big fan of Ian Thomas, and I've watched him. I don't think he presents any sort of threat for this team at tight end. And if you were to pick out one position in Carolina that you said, okay, what's the weakest position in Carolina? I would without a doubt say tight end is the weakest position, even as young as this defense is. All of that said, the thing is because it's so weak, Ian Thomas, he right now is the unanimous starter at tight end this year. So he right now, as the roster sits, is going to get a lot of touches and is going to get a lot of reps. I think he'll be used more as a blocker, believe it or not, than he will as a receiver. But all of that said, what Bridgewater likes to do is throw to the first guy he sees open. He does not care whose name is on the back of the jersey. So when this team gets into the red zone, if Matt Rhule finds a way to sneak the tight end open, which he did a lot of in Baylor, then I mean, I think there's a good chance. I think Ian Thomas could be a guy where it's like two, three receptions a game, but one of them every other game is a touchdown. Well, if that's the case, he's got a ton of value, right? Especially in some of these deeper leagues. So I would probably still take Curtis Samuel over it just because I don't feel confident in Ian Thomas's ability to be a number one tight end for any team in the league. But I think if you're in a deeper league and you want a backup tight end that maybe it has something to prove throughout the season, that's where I think you're going to find value in Ian Thomas.
Someone you're picking up more, you know, mid-season more than drafting them.
Right, exactly.
And you did briefly mention the young defense. I know they spent a lot of their draft picks on defense. I think all their draft picks on defense.
All their draft picks on defense. Oh, yeah.
So I guess we're not going to know because it's going to be filled with rookies, but I know it's probably going to be pretty bad on both, especially early, but where do you think their strength lies on defense, if there is one? Is it in the run defense or is it in the pass defense? More, and this is more to how do we approach them, you know, in terms of fantasy matchups, or is it regardless of the position, just if you see the Panthers as an opponent, you're playing that player?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Panthers are going to have a pretty strong run defense just because Derek Brown is maybe the best run defensive player that was available in this draft. That's what he defends really, really well. Of course, last year, that was the Panthers' biggest weakness, and that was with Luke Kuechly, who now they've lost. So they went for the best run defensive player in the draft, but now how do you replace Luke Kuechly, right? So that's going to be the struggle. But I do think that because of Derek Brown, because of Gross Matos, Kawan Short is going to get the start, and I like Shaq Thompson a lot. This is going to be a very, very good or a much improved run defense. Now, as far as the pass defense is concerned, I think it all depends. How do you replace Eric Reed? That's a tough replacement. I love Jeremy Chin out of Southern Illinois. Goes Salukis. Love him. Dante Jackson comes in at corner. I think he's interesting. Trey Boston, very, very smart free safety. And then Eli Apple, an experienced corner, a little bit slower, gets burnt. So I think because of the youth, because Jeremy Chin is now going from playing at Southern Illinois to now starting strong safety, I think that's going to be a tough ask of the secondary. So I think their biggest weakness is in the pass. And I think their biggest strength, although it may not be a strength, is going to be that run defense.
Now their pass defense, if it is as, you know, if they do struggle as much as you expect, I think that boosts the chances of Robbie Anderson and DJ Moore both producing if the team's having to throw so much because the secondary can't stop anyone, they're always down in games. So if anything, it might help their own fantasy players as much as helping their opponent's fantasy players.
Well, you could, I mean, it's a great argument to make, but let's flip it around. We can make the same argument about Christian McCaffrey, right? Like Matt Rhule, I think, is a smart coach. If Matt Rhule looks at this defense and he thinks the secondary is going to be that big of a problem with Tom Brady in your division, Drew Brees in your division, Matty Ice in your division, if he thinks the secondary is that weak, don't you think he's going to rely a whole lot more in the run game and try to stay away from getting into, you know, a 41-38 barn burner? Don't you think he's going to want to try and slow the game down, try and play, you know, time of possession, and then you're going to see an uptick in McCaffrey carries?
That is true. I guess there's always two sides to a coin. So CJ, thanks a lot for joining us. Appreciate that. If you want to plug anything, you want to share where your Twitter handle is or any of the content that you've created recently?
Yeah, sure. So just go to, you can find me on Twitter, SweetSweatCJ. In addition to the Panthers podcast, if you're a college football fan, we just debuted on Saturday our Moneyline podcast, which is a college football betting podcast. So if you like to bet money and lose a lot of it, like I do, you can go listen to that. That we just did that on Saturday, and we did our college football preview and ranked the top 10 teams in the country. So yeah, just check me out, Sweet Sweat CJ. We constantly stuff going on.
Great. Yeah, glad to see you that you're creating tons of content for Full Press coverage. Really appreciate it. I'm sure Ian also really appreciates it too.
Well, I hope so.
Of course, you can follow all of us at Full Press Coverage at @FPC_coverage, this podcast at @FPC_fantasypod, your co-hosts, Alessandro's at @AM_senator, the absentee Kayla at @NorthDakayla74, myself at @SenraSays. Also download the Full Press Coverage app, wherever available in all app stores for Android and Apple. So definitely check that out to get access to all of our great written content, podcasts, and access to the Full Press Radio Network. So, on behalf of Alessandro and our guest CJ, who, again, we appreciate greatly for coming on, thank you all for listening to the Full Press Fantasy Pod.